Over the past couple of weeks leading into the Easter series, we've been talking about the king and the cross. And we've been asking the question, what does a king, someone with power and authority, have to do with the cross? A symbol of shame and pain and guilt and suffering. What do the king and the cross have to do with one another? And it's on this day, the crucifixion day, where it all comes together. See, Jesus foreshadows this day with his disciples. And he says this to them before going to the cross. In Mark chapter 10, verse 45, he says, "The Son of Man, speaking of himself, did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Now, when the first century hearers heard Jesus say that he came to be a ransom, they would have thought of something very specific. The Greek word here is lutron. It was the word used to talk about a payment that could be given to set a prisoner of war or a slave free. See, their prisoners of war or slaves would have been common in that time. And the thing standing between their captivity and their freedom was somebody coming along to pay the ransom price, the lutron price. So there's captivity separated from freedom that required a ransom, somebody who could pay the price. And so when Jesus says to his disciples that he's come to be a ransom, there's no doubt that there were two things floating around in their mind. The first is, what are we captive to? What are we held captive to? What are we bound to? And the second question is, well, what does it mean to pay the ransom price? I want to focus on these two questions this morning. First, what are we held captive to? I had coffee with a friend of mine this week, and she said to me, "Keith, you know what? I feel wrapped up in anger. I feel bound to a spirit of unforgiveness, and my anger and my unforgiveness are the reason I have no relationship with my Father." See, my friend was talking about captivity. For her, her anger and her fear had her anger and unforgiveness had her so bound up that she couldn't step into a life that could flourish. These are captive words. And I have a feeling that we all know a sense of our own captivity. For some people, they're captive to anger and resentment and unforgiveness. Other people feel chained to addiction. Other people feel like they live with a deep sense of fear or hopelessness. Perhaps you look at your family, your situation and how broken it is, and you say, "This is just hopeless." Others live chained to their past decisions, past things that have gone unresolved, or past sins that have been committed against them. See, there are things that we're held captive to, and the scriptures help us understand what's really going on. And as we read through them, three things begin to emerge, three things that hold us captive. In John chapter 8, Jesus talks about the first one. He says that we're captive to sin. He actually says we're slaves to it. You see, sin is rejecting God's leadership in our life. And when we don't follow God's ways, when we reject his leadership, everything unravels. Chaos ensues. See, God knows how all things are put together and the right way for them to be put together. But when we reject his ways and his leadership, it all comes apart and brokenness ensues. And I don't need to convince you of this, I'm sure. We look at our world or our lives and we see it. Things are just not the way they're meant to be. And so we're captive to sin, which leads to brokenness. But it's not just brokenness that our sin leads to. It's a position of guilt. See, if we're all honest, we have to admit that we are the ones who have been part of the breaking. That from time to time we've rejected God's leadership. And the brokenness, and yes, perhaps even the evil we see in this world, is because of us. Our sin that we're captive to leads to our brokenness and our guilt. The scriptures paint an even deeper picture. In Romans chapter 6, it tells us that we're captive to death itself. That the penalty for our rejection of God is death. And this makes sense because there's no life apart from the one who gives life. And so we're slaves to death because of our sin. And when we're slaves to death, we live a life of fear. Fear of the end, fear of the future. The scriptures go on and paint an even more troublesome picture. We're also slaves to unseen spiritual forces. We don't like to talk about this in the West. Ephesians 6 does a good job of telling us about this. And it gives us this picture that there are rulers and principalities of this place that are dark. And there is an evil one, whether we like it or not, that would love to see God and his creation and his people destroyed. And as people who can be held captive by an evil one, well, that leads to oppression and bondage. So what are we captive to? As we feel these things that we're bound to, well, we're captive to the sin and the brokenness and guilt that it causes. We're captive to the evil one who binds and oppresses. And yes, we're captive to even death itself and the fear, the dark fear that shadows over us. So when Jesus says to the disciples, I've come to set the captives free, to pay the ransom price, this is what he's talking about. Jesus has come to take sin upon himself. He's come to defeat evil and the evil one. He's even come to turn death upside down. So there will be no more brokenness. So we will no longer stand in a place of guilt. So the oppressed might go free. And yes, the dead will raise and live again. This is what Jesus means when he says he's come to pay the ransom. Which brings us to the second question. What does it mean to pay the ransom price? When Jesus says he's come to give his life as a ransom for many, this word for is very important. In the Greek, it's the word anti, which means in the place of or instead of. Jesus says, I'm the king and I have come to take your place in death. To die in your place. You're the one who rejected God. You're the one who has unleashed brokenness and evil in the world. You are the one who stands condemned. But I, the king, Jesus, will take your place in death. When Andrea read this morning that Jesus died between two criminals on a cross, my heart cried out and said, Jesus, you did not belong there. And it's at this point that people say, well, why did Jesus have to die at all? Why did anyone have to die? Why couldn't God just forgive and forget? Well, it's because God was caught in this great cosmic paradox. You see, on one hand, his character of love compels God to forgive. It compels God to release his creation into the fullness of life. But the other hand, God is a God of holiness and justice. And when evil is unleashed on the world and when brokenness rules the day, God has to make it right. You see, God cannot pardon and punish the wrongdoer at the same time. And so his solution is, I will not punish the one who has made the offense. I'll send myself, my son Jesus, to take sin and death and the evil one on and put them to death on the cross in place of a sinner. My daughter was at the park this last week. We took her to the park. And I watched her climb up this big play structure. And she got to the very top and she looked down at all the kids below. And she puffed up her chest and she sang this out. I'm the king of the castle and you're the dirty rascal. Oh, and something in my heart broke in that moment. I ran over to her and I said, sweetheart, we don't say that. She said, why, Daddy? I said, because the real king, he came to be the dirty rascal. And he came so that the dirty rascal would no longer be dirty and would no longer live as a rascal. This is what the king has to do with the cross. That he came to die the sinner's death in place of the sinner so that we could go free. So that we would no longer be captives to sin and its brokenness. We'd be no longer captives to the evil one. We'd no longer be captives to death itself. The king did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And the challenge I see in the church these days is that we're people who probably have put our faith in Jesus a long time ago. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you're here hearing this for the first time. Well, today's a day that you can put your faith and be set free as you put your faith in Jesus. But as a community that's been following Jesus for a long time, it pains me to see that we are still held captive. That if Jesus has come to set us free, why do we still wrestle with the brokenness? Why do we still wrestle with some of those deep, dark sins that lurk underneath the surface? I think part of the answer to that is because we like our captivity. We choose our captivity. I know I do. I got into an argument with my wife 2 weeks ago. I love airing my dirty laundry up here. It's great. I had come home from a long day at work. I had been tired. And my daughter was at home, and apparently she was tired as well. She missed her nap, and she was really grumpy this day. And so when I got home, I just wanted some rest. And she was just at it all the time, just crying and whining and misbehaving. And every 2 minutes, I was turning to her and snapping, just putting her in her place, getting angry and yelling and telling her to be quiet. And at the end of the evening, my wife had had enough. She turned to me and she said, "Keith, she does not need you to yell at her. She needs a hug from her dad." Oh, and boy, I needed to hear that in the moment. But I did not want to hear that in the moment. And in that moment, I made a decision. "Gina, if you don't like the way that I'm parenting, I'm going to turn off." And I didn't talk to my wife for that whole night. I went to bed. I woke up in the morning. I got ready for work quickly. I didn't talk to her the whole morning. I didn't even make the cup of coffee that I make for her every morning. I was sending a message. And on my way to work, I work at a church. The Spirit of God spoke to me and said, "Keith, Jesus died so you would no longer live this way. Jesus died so you would no longer choose captivity to evil and brokenness and darkness." See, sometimes as God's people, we've been freed by the power of the cross. We've been freed by Jesus' sacrifice, but we continue to choose to live in darkness. And can I say, when I acted that way, there was an evil that covered my house. There was a darkness that affected my relationship with my wife and even my kids, because I chose it. And friends, I believe that Jesus has so much more for us as a community. But in order to step into the freedom and the life that he has, we've got to stop choosing captivity. Because he's paid for it on the cross. Sin is no more. We can look at sin and the evil one and even death itself and say, "You're no longer my master," because of Jesus. So this morning, you either received a card when you walked in, that blank piece of paper, it says ransom on it. If you didn't, you can grab one of the action cards, or there'll be a piece of paper in the pew in front of you. And what I want to do for the next 5 minutes is Alana's going to come and play a song. And I want you to write down on that piece of paper the things that are holding you captive. I want you to spend 5 minutes with the Lord and just write down the things that you need ransomed from, released from, those things that you're bound to. Because it's at the cross where we find freedom. freedom. And so Alana's going to play. She's going to sing a song over us. And then at the end of that, we're going to come into a time of communion. And I want you to take those things that you need to be ransomed from. And you can crumple them up. And you can leave them in the basket at the foot of the cross. And then receive the life of Jesus. The freedom of Jesus as we partake in the communion together.
Skies lay low where you are. On the earth you rest your feet. Yet the hands that cradle the stars are the hands that bled for me. For me, in a moment of glorious surrender, you were broken for all the world to see, lifted out of the ashes.
What I want us to do is to take these things that we need ransom from, and to come and put them in the basket at the foot of the cross, because it's at the cross where Jesus bought our freedom. He paid our ransom, and he defeated all the things that have you wrapped up. And after leaving that at the cross, Jesus gives us something in return. He gives us himself. And so I just invite you to receive the freedom and forgiveness and healing that he has. I'm just going to pray. Jesus, I pray that as we come to your communion table, that the ransoming King would unleash his power of freedom on us. Jesus, thank you for taking our place. And I pray today, God, that you would break things off that need to be broken. In the name of Jesus, I pray that the effects of sin would be undone because of your power. I pray that you'd release the captives. Lord, I pray that you would release us from guilt and that you would propel us forward in the freedom that you have. So we just want to come to your table and celebrate you, Jesus, the ransoming King. Amen. When Jesus breathed his last breath, it says in the scriptures, when he gave up his spirit, he said, "It is finished." The captive has been set free. The ransom has been paid. And those the King sets free are free indeed. That's what marks us. Jesus paid it all. Let's declare that together as we close our time.
Please stand with us.